This is the Mind Your Business podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Mind Your Business podcast. My name is Matt Williams and I'm joined this afternoon and always by the marvellous Alan Clark. How are you going, Alan? You good?
I am very good. I'm very good. I've had a great week. Tons of conversations, tons of energy, lots of things going on and possibilities coming in fast and furious.
Amazing.
There you go.
That's what we want. Yeah, that's what we want to hear. I've been busy in the office with a get stuff done week where I have no meetings and I just have a diary completely blank and I can do all the on the business things rather than the in the business things. And I need to do it every quarter. I don't know why we don't. I think maybe everyone should, right? Block it out. Assume you tell everyone you're going on holiday and then spend a week getting stuff done. And we've had a big whiteboard in the office with all the things we want to achieve. They're all being crossed off one by one. I'm feeling buoyant. I think that's the word I would use.
Fabulous.
Very buoyant.
Right?
So that's good. So happy days. And this is a momentous day that we're doing this podcast on. We've had a change of prime minister.
Mm.
Well, always change. We're going to have a change. We just need to they need to get their stuff done, don't they, really? But that's exciting stuff. And it kind of leads a little bit into what we're going to be talking about today. It's not a politics show, so don't everybody switch off. But what are we talking about today, Mr. Clark?
Well, I think we'd go for be our punchy best and try and provide as much value as we can in our 30 minutes. And, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, the government is sort of imploding by the day, isn't it? And record amount of MPs leaving, resigning. And I've just heard that news about Boris Johnson himself today. So there's a backdrop of that uncertainty. There's uncertainty in the government and future direction. There's uncertainty about the ongoing, I guess, economy with regarding inflation and interest rates. There's uncertainty with the impact of Ukraine as that continues to go on. And also COVID, and throw in some other things going on. So this sort of, we're calling it the summer of discontent. And then you go and fill up your car with diesel and oh dear, it's just incredible what impact that's having as well. So there's a lot of uncertainty and anxiety and worry out there. And of course, there is always an antidote. There is always a wise way through this. And what we want to do today is give our listeners three things, if they do well, focus on during this summer, it'll make a huge positive impact on their business and free themselves from this angst.
I love this. So basically, we're like business doctors prescribing medication to help you through this summer of discontent.
I love that. Yes, that's a great analogy. We are going to write a prescription and we're going to give it out to our listeners.
I love it. Okay. And do you know what? I've just had to move my laptop quickly because it was too sunny where I was sat. That's first world problems, that is, isn't it? We love it. Okay. So I'm really excited about this one. I can't wait to get going. So what's medication? What's tablet number one then for people that are feeling anxious about their business, about, you know, customers, growth, cash flow, all these, you know, people? Which one are we tackling first and how are we tackling
it? And absolutely, that's a great headline because actually I think all three are in just what you've just said there. So we're going to have a balanced prescription here. But for definitely number one, if ever there was a time to astonish your clients and deliver for your clients and care for your clients and care for your customers, it is absolutely now. And that does not matter what business you're in, if that's retail, if it's restaurant, if it's professional services, whatever that may be. If ever there was a time to do it, it is now.
Agreed. And do you know, this, how strange is this? We don't, our listeners know, we don't plan these particularly far ahead, but I was having a conversation with my optician yesterday and she was telling me something that they did during the pandemic when they were forced to close that they've continued to do because their customers love it. And it's one of those eureka moments where they're like, why didn't we always do this? So let me tell you the story because I think it's quite interesting. So there are little independent opticians in the town that I live. And they were hit quite hard by the initial lockdown because they couldn't open their shop. They're in a very old listed, like converted house, basically, in the town centre. Lots of little nooks and crannies and teeny tiny rooms. Not a traditional retail site, but they're running a shop from it. And the nature of eye tests and stuff is it's very close contact one-to-one with the optometrist, right? So they were really, to get through COVID was a struggle for them because they couldn't have people in the shops. And what they ended up doing was they could do the, once they could open again, and they could do the eye tests, but they couldn't do the retail bit of the business. So they could do the eye test, but then they couldn't sell you glasses because you couldn't be in the shop to try them on. And actually, that's the bit where opticians make their money. So what they do is they've created like a mobile opticians, and you go and have your eye test with them. And then the next day they turn up, and during COVID, they'd be sat in your garden or sat on your doorstep with, these are the 15 pairs of glasses we think suit you. Try them on, go and take them inside the house, put them on, see what you think. And they were selling their glasses like this, and they realized that they upsell really. It's a better experience, right? They sit and have a cup of tea with their client, and they, you know, it's just a nicer experience. And they've not stopped. Since COVID, they've now, you know, the business, they can get people out of their shop in front of their customers. And no one, I don't know if it, I mean, maybe there are other opticians that do this, but I don't believe that. But the process now is so slick, and their clients love it. And they've continued doing it. You think, there you go. Astonishing customers, right? They've diversified.
I love that. I love that because most optician optometrist businesses would not entertain that. And it would be written off immediately as it's logistically too challenging, or we don't have enough resource, or nobody would value it, or it's too expensive. And you guys have taken the insight and they've ran with it. And you just said that exactly. They have perfected it. So they've answered all these challenges, and they have now got an unfair advantage, or well, one that they created. So it is a fair advantage, I guess, over their competitors, which is absolutely wonderful. I'll give you a negative sign. Where I live, there are two retail units, both retailing in the same space. One is a national huge company. The other one is an independent version of it. And the absolutely huge national company is, you know, is letting everyone down massively. You go into that shop, it's dirty. The windows are cluttered. This is the retailer in me coming out. The windows are cluttered. There is, must be about 50% of the available stock is there. There is nobody to manage queues. It's queues coming out of shops. There's random signs saying we don't have any staff, we're now closed. And the independent one is loving it, you know. And the conversation all around the town is bin that big national chain and go to there. Now, I suspect if they really wanted to, it would take a bit of a while, but they could get resource into that shop. But whatever reason, they've not. And they are losing customers forever. In droves at a time when they absolutely don't want to do that. And you know, it's incredible that businesses right now in this current context are doing that to themselves. It's like taking a hammer and smashing it against your hand. Why would you do that? You know, it's why would you do that? So that's the opposite end of what I've seen that you're talking about there, Matt.
It's interesting, they're both retail, but that applies to any business, right? Your customers are the lifeblood of your business. Looking after them is the most obvious thing in the world, and yet sometimes people, because it's so obvious, it doesn't get given the thought and the care and the attention that maybe it should. I think we've talked a few times about one of my clients who's had a really tough time and lost a load of clients for not because they've lack of service, but for various reasons. And they made a point of over-servicing every other client that they had to kind of cling on to what they'd got. But he was telling me end of last week that one of the clients that served notice is now staying with them because in the 6-week notice period, they threw so much at him, not because they were desperate for him to stay or they were making a play for him to stay, but just because they had the time and that's how the business is. And this guy said, you know what, we can't leave. We're going to work out a way of working with you and get the budget and do it, and off we go. And there's a lot to be said for it's much cheaper to retain existing clients than it is to obtain new clients. That's the, you know, first rule of marketing. And actually, if you've got spare capacity in your business because it's tougher out there and you're not bringing on the new client growth that you'd like, over-servicing your clients and your customers will A, prevent churn, won't it? It'll stop them leaving and going elsewhere. And it will allow you to upsell to them. There may be more products that you have that you can sell to them. And it will allow you to raise your prices, which I think we're going to talk about in a bit anyway. But it's all linked. But it all starts with client astonishment and pushing up, you know, and having that as the core of whatever you do, how you answer your phone, how you respond to emails, how you, I don't know, fit out your shop. All of that is that client experience, client astonishment piece.
Oh, it is. And I mean, and you gave many benefits there. Another benefit is genuinely it feels great to do it. You know, so
100%. You get that warm, fuzzy feeling.
You absolutely do. I was speaking to somebody in professional services today, and he said, you know what, I've had two challenging conversations with clients, and not challenging is that in that there was friction, but genuinely the subject matter was pretty challenging. And this guy is very bright, and he was pushing himself to the limit in terms of complexity, but he really did get to the nub of the issue and gave a solution. His clients were delighted, and he was buzzing, absolutely buzzing. And, you know, and that comes from, that was his version of client astonishment this morning. But of course, when you're challenged in the profession that you love to go that extra mile to make a huge difference, you tend to feel phenomenal in it. And for businesses that have people working for them, you know, that's a phenomenal way to get the culture you're looking for, the engagement you're looking for, performance culture, whatever that may be. But it's this energy, this positive energy, intent to help and make a huge difference is just so valuable. And in this summer of discontent, will give you something that your competitors won't have and put you in a phenomenal position.
And I think there's a, if you can get that so embedded that it's natural, it's not something you're selling, it's just how you are. And I know that's a bit wishy-washy, but stick with me. If you're competing for new business and your competition are, you know, so times are hard, everyone's fighting hard for new customers. If you're going in and having conversations with your clients and you can show that client astonishment piece, or however you may show it, and it's embedded in your business, and your competition are competing with you on price, and that's all they've got in their quiver, you will win more times than you lose off client astonishment, even though the cost of living crisis and all of that, actually, if you can get the right level of client astonishment and just throughout whatever you do, people will still pay, they value that a lot more than they do saving 50p a product or whatever it is you do. So yeah, it's definitely, yeah, the best, it's the right place for us to start this podcast. But it is, the if you can only do one of the three things we do, that focus on client astonishment is going to pay you dividends down the line. It's not just a quick fix, it's a long-term strategy that will deliver.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so we're 14 minutes in and we've got one prescription item.
500 milligrams of client astonishment.
500 milligrams, four times a day, Matt. Four times a day. You know, let's go for the maximum dose.
Okay, what's next then? What's
right,
next
on our list? Next one is going to a different part. So we're looking at the finances the next time, okay? The second drug is about the finances. And I think it's a two-parter for me. One, look at your invoices, your invoicing, your system, whatever system you've got, and now is the time to make sure that you are invoicing on time. You know, you've talked about cash flow a few times, and there's an episode that was actually labeled Cash Flow Masterclass, and that's, you know, it was a phenomenal episode. But you know, again, it is late invoicing is getting the hammer to the hand and smashing it. We're inflicting pain on ourselves, on our businesses, and everything else, putting pressure that doesn't need to be put there. So job number one, sort out your invoicing, get it on time. And then job number two, again, let's look at pricing. Let's look at pricing. Are you priced in a manner that you should be? And although there's a lot of price increasing going on, I suspect most businesses aren't. And this is a time to go for it. Yes, there's work here. Yes, it takes courage, but good grief, this makes a huge difference to your cash flow.
100%. And you're right. Very few small owner-managed businesses are raising their prices, or they're raising them, but not by the level that they need to in order to maintain their margin. And I think that is, and same in my business, right? And yours, because yep. I know you invoice me every yep. month and it hasn't gone up, yep. right? Everyone's got to practice what they preach here, but I think it's really interesting. Some businesses' costs have rocketed during the last 2 years, and they're not coming down. And if I pat myself on the back because I raised my prices mm-hmm. last year, but that's last year. That's out of date now. Long gone. The staff have had pay rises. You know, the rent's gone up, the heat and light's gone up, the insurance has gone up, everything goes up, right? You shouldn't be scared to raise your prices, but you need to, I think, be able to justify them. That's the key, right? You're never going to have, in my experience, a conversation with a customer where they say flat out, no, we're going. If you raise your price to that, I'm going to leave. You may have a robust conversation and have to negotiate, but more than likely, as long as you can justify your price, then whether a client leaves or stays, the price is only a minor factor of it. And often it's the service and there's other factors at play. And I'm going to use an example from literally yesterday's news about Lerpak.
That was the one I was going to use. This is an absolute cracker. Right, over to you, sir.
So let's see if we ended up at the same place. This is crazy. And probably would be where there'd be a benefit in us planning our podcast. But did you see? So Lerpak has got a lot of stick, and it's been in the national press because it's £9 a kilo, right? Which is, and you know what? I've been monitoring this on my weekly online shopping, and I've been watching the price of it go up. So they got a spokesman from Lerpak on the news last night, and they were quite robust in what they came back and said. They said, yeah, it's that much money because we believe in paying our farmers a fair price. And I took that. You know what? Now I'm not thinking bloody hell, Lerpak butter's too expensive. I'm thinking, Christ, look at this one, this brand, and how much are they paying the farmers? And is it putting a farmer out of business by buying Anchor butter rather than Lerpak? And we're now buying Lerpak on the basis that I'm comfortable that ethically the supply chain is protected for them, and it might not be for the cheaper options. So that's where I am on this. So in my mind, what they've done is their premium price, and they've justified it, and some consumers won't buy it, but I don't think they would be buying it anyway. And those that are buying Lerpak anyway are on the Lerpak wagon, are going to stay on it now with a comfier feeling that, you know what, we're doing our bit for British farmers as well.
I think it's a brilliant example for me that there's quite a lot in this. It's because it's a large tub. That's why there's a lot in it. But there's quite a lot in this Lerpak example. So there's the case you've made. But for me, there's a bit of a lighter look at if we need a role model for thousands and thousands of businesses that are having sleepless nights about raising their prices, and Lerpak can go to nearly £10 a tub of butter and justify it, every single small business can do exactly the same. So we could call it the Lerpak effect going forward. But if they can make a compelling reason and stick with it, then so can everyone. So I think we take courage from Lerpak. We can be skeptical if that really is getting all the way through to the farmers. But they've come out and they've given people a choice, because you don't need to buy Lerpak. But they've stuck with that, and they know that, and they've stuck with that. And I suspect the vast majority of people will continue to buy Lerpak. So good on them. Well, but let's use that as motivation to us all to say, right.
Okay. I mean, I think there is, yeah, they're coming at it from a position of strength, because they've always been the most expensive butter. Mm. I remember going to a talk at a big conference, and the whole theme of it was buy the Lerpak. Like, if you want it, then buy it and you'll find a way. And that was inspirational back then. But the reality is they've got a product where they're comfortable that you can pay less, but you're not going to get the quality that we've got. And they're quite comfortable with that. And actually, that is not, there's loads of businesses that I know that aren't, you know, you can go to a national brand and get what they do cheaper, but people don't want that. They come to you because they want the client astonishment.
That is it. I mean, that's a phenomenal point. Exactly. And that's another thing. And you did actually say that in the point one, that is another possibility that client astonishment gives you. Because if you are the best, or certainly on the way to be and very, very good, then you can command a different price point. And Lerpak is tasty butter for sure. And they can command that. So I think that's a phenomenal point.
I've just got a little add-on to that because just because I was cooking last night and I got the Lerpak out of the fridge and then took some and put it in a frying pan to finish my steak off. And I did think, now maybe what I need to do is buy some cheap butter for this, because I'm literally, that's probably like 80p's worth of butter that I've literally just melted in a pan to add some flavouring. And I'm not sure that's where I'm getting my value for money out of Lerpak. Put it on some toast, love it all day long. Stick it in a frying pan. Maybe that's where the place for the cheaper butter is. But we'll come back to that on our cooking podcast, which is due out next week.
I give me an example of a real business that I've been talking to in the last 4 weeks, right? And they have a professional services company, and they worked out based on their number of clients. Again, this company hasn't raised prices in a couple of years, right? And that is not uncommon. We both know that it's not an uncommon situation. And this is a professional services company, right? And they worked out it's worked out that the actual calculation is very straightforward, but it, you know what this is like, we're working with so many different people. This gets buried in emotion and reasons why he's not in business. And you just very often don't even get to this level of clarity. But by raising the prices £10 for every customer a month, they were bringing just shy £4,000 every month on the bottom line. No extra clients required. £10 for what they do. I suspect that precious few people do even question that. I arguably even notice it. And this would make this impact. And I was listening to that, and I was like, oh my word! There's another phenomenal reason, because if you then do that £4,000 by 12 months. You're just shy of 50,000. I'm showing off my maths now. And then 3 years, even if you didn't raise prices again in 3 years, there's 150,000 that wouldn't have been there. And this is how...
For no extra work.
Exactly.
No extra.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's phenomenal. And every business owner, every business has got access to this if they choose. So it's a really potent one. So yeah, invoice on time. Don't go weeks and weeks and weeks before you even invoice, never mind.
Check your cash flow.
Yeah, and then this pricing thing will really bolster your cash flow, won't it, Mr. Cashflow Expert?
It 100% will. I love it. Okay, we're going to run out of time, though, and we want to finish with a third prescription. So what we've managed, customer astonishment all day long. That's where our focus needs to be. Then on protecting our cash flow and raising our prices. There's no other way. I'm not going to say watch our prices. It's raise your prices, right? That needs to happen. What's step three?
Right. Step P is very much in your people space. And the truth is every business has employees that make a huge, stellar impact to that business. And if they were to leave, the business would be poorer for it. And actually, many businesses that are a certain size have got probably one key person, and it's usually quite often the general manager, the level below the CEO, that takes away the day-to-day responsibility of that business. Let the CEO go out and do what the CEO does best. And if that position was not there, and this is just an example, the CEO drops right down and suddenly the business is stalling badly. You know, the truth is right now, the people, good people are getting headhunted left, right, and center. There's a lot of money to be made in the recruitment space, and it's extremely difficult for companies to recruit good people. You know, that's a generalism, but it's pretty accurate. So again, just like the customer, if ever there was a time to look after your customer, the same applies to your best people. Love your best people, I think, is drug number three.
Oh, I'm so on board with this. I was talking, again, in my conversation with my optician yesterday, I was explaining to her how we operate, because her daughter's an accountant. And I was pitching, I'll be perfectly honest. Anytime I speak to a business owner, I'm half pitching for what we do, because we love working with cool businesses, and this is a cool business, right? But her daughter's an accountant, and the firm she works for looks after her mum's business, and that's all. But she was saying, how does working from home affect? And I said, well, it never really bothered us, because we were flexible prior to COVID. And they were saying, but we don't do timesheets, and my issue is that my team work too hard, and they do hours over and above what they should, and I'm always telling them to turn their laptops off and it can wait till tomorrow. They said, oh, didn't you check them then? I said, no, we don't. Yeah, that's not our culture. That's not how we operate. She said, oh. It always makes me laugh, because my daughter for 2 days a week comes and works at my house. And so I'm there and we're sat having a cup of tea, and then all of a sudden she'll run off to her laptop and move her mouse quickly so that whatever software on her laptop picks up that she's still working. And we had this whole conversation about how that, you know, there are firms out there that's perfectly normal and they want people logged in at 9 o'clock and leave again at five. And I said to her, is her firm understaffed? And she said, yeah, they're always struggling to recruit. And I said, that's interesting, because we've got a new person starting on Monday, another one starting in October. We had a short list of three. We've got two more that want to come and work. And it's not because, as much as I love my business, it's not because of me and my business. It's because of the way we treat our people. And it stems, you know, it's not only just holding on to them, but it's attracting new people. They will suss your culture out. And if you're not flexible nowadays, and hybrid working is anti what you do, and you're not best of breed and employee astonishment alongside customer astonishment, you're missing out and you're going to hemorrhage staff. And if someone leaves, the reality is getting someone new in to replace them is going to cost you a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of stress.
You're absolutely spot on. You're spot on. And again, you reap the rewards for how you treat your people. You know, it's simple as that. You treat them phenomenally well. The culture reflects that, and the reputation reflects your culture. And lo and behold, you tend to get top people in relatively quickly, don't you?
I do, but I'm very aware that I don't do any work in my business anymore. If they leave, Alan, I've got no business. That's game over. Mm-hmm. And that's not bespoke to me in a professional services business. That is just the same. If I ran a pub and I've got three chefs in my pub, if one of those leaves or two of those leaves, the business stops functioning. I went past a pub the other day and it said, kitchen's closed, we need a chef. And you think, the opportunity cost of that, you know, I don't know why that chef left that business, but it could have been a lack of flexibility. It could have been for £1,500 salary or something. And you think £1,500 pay rise sounds a lot, until you realise that if your kitchen is now closed 3 days out of every seven, that's a lot more than £1,500 of margin that you've lost for the sake. That's the position that we're in. You've got to look after your people. You've got to see past the pay rise and past the flexible working and past whatever, you know, the issues, perceived issues are, and look at how much does it cost to replace this person? Are they performing, you know, as long as they're performing, obviously if they're a disaster, then, you know, we're not just throwing money at people to keep disasters in the business, but assuming you've got good people, you've got to find a way of incentivizing, motivating, and rewarding.
You absolutely do. And this rule holds in any size of business, the biggest of the big and the smallest of the small. I personally think right now that smaller businesses are even more vulnerable to this, because there tends to be one or two really key people that over the months and the years that the business is actually very dependent on. And if these people go in this current market, it is extremely difficult and actually very expensive to recruit in. And there's no guarantees whatsoever that the people coming in will be of that caliber. And finance and reward is absolutely in the mix, but so is even taking some time. Are these guys all right? What's in their mind? What's holding them back? What are they thinking about their future? What are they thinking about your company? And just spending more and more time, colleague astonishment in many ways, to just get these people feeling as good as they can about your company and the business. Do that, and you'll seriously minimize the opportunity of other companies to headhunt them.
And it also stems, day one is a massive, important day. Whenever you're hiring someone new, you know, you hire someone, they're on a probation period, but you need to understand as a business owner, you're on probation as well. Like at that point, you've got 3 months where they can walk out and take another job really quickly. They're kind of set free from this 3 month notice period they've been in. And so you've got to astonish them and wow them and fit them and bed them in ASAP. We were talking about this today. You know, we've got this new start on Monday, and we've sent her an email today with what to expect on Monday. So she's got no nerves. We know, you know, these are the meetings we're going to have on Monday. We're going to sit down with me, and I'm going to talk through vision and culture and where the business is going and where we've been and tell her the whole story. And then she's going to have one-to-ones with the team, and we're going to set her up on her laptop in the morning. And then she's got these meetings, and we're giving her, you know, she'll have a hamper to go home with and talk to her family about at the end of the day. And the whole idea is that she goes home buzzing, like, this is the place for me. And if we didn't do that, you're kind of just starting off on the wrong foot. You know, my first day at my old job, I don't think we've ever talked about this. I rang my wife about 11:30 on that first day and said, this is not the place for me. This I've made a big mistake. This there's not something not right here. And you know what? I stayed there for 13 years, right? So it got better. Before it got massively worse, it got better. But my first impression, and that would kill me today, if one of my new hires were ringing their other half at 11 o'clock on the first day and saying, no, I don't like it, that would be disaster. Like, I would take that personally. And so we go all out the other way to push them in, because there's a massive, the work hasn't stopped. Your recruitment hasn't finished until they pass their probation and they're bedded in. And day one is the most important day of that 3 month probation period.
Spot on. Right. The clock is saying 33 minutes and 44 seconds, and that there's clearly this is post-edit, so we'll get it down to about 32, but it's probably time for us to summarize and leave. So
I feel like I'm waffling a lot.
You're not
today,
so I don't think you have. You have not waffled.
What have we talked about today?
Right.
Mr.
So we've talked.
What are we prescribing?
Right. We've talked about a summer of discontent. There is a lot of chaos and uncertainty going on in the world right now, and the headline is negative. And that can cause a lot of problems for a lot of businesses. And we don't want that. We're having none of it. So what we've done is dispense three drugs today. And we reckon if you take these three drugs and take your medicine, as my gran used to say, you'll be much better for it. So drug number one is client and customer astonishment. Just go out and make a huge positive impact to your customers. Love them like you've never done before. And that will give you some space whilst other people are imploding around because they just aren't doing that. So that's number one, love your customers more than ever. Number two is on the finance space. So sort out your invoicing and sort out your pricing upwards. And the reward you will get is a healthy cash flow at a time when there's a lot of anxiety and worry about. And third one is similar to number one. It's if there ever is a time to love your key people and look after them, it is now. And there are so many headhunters out there that would be very happy to take away your best people, and you will be crippled if they do. So that is the three medicines that we're giving out today.
I love that. And on that note, we'll say goodbye. So that's all from me, and that's all from my friend Alan.
Goodbye.
This is the Mind Your Business podcast.